You're listening to the Web Marketing Adelaide podcast. We give you the tips and strategies to help you utilise the web to get more traffic, leads and sales for your business. Now here's your host, Nick Morris.
Welcome back to episode 22 of the Web Marketing Adelaide podcast. This week we're doing things a little bit differently. Before I started this podcast, I had a blog called Internet Marketing Adelaide. This is a Blogspot blog. Blogspot being, or Blogger, being Google's blogging service, or the one they purchased about 5 years ago. If you go back to my episode where I talked about WordPress with Karen Lanthois, we talked a little bit about Blogger and different blogging platforms and how WordPress is a much better platform. But anyway, I started this blog, Internet Marketing Adelaide, on the Blogger platform, which was free. It was fairly similar to the premise of this podcast, where I wrote articles on internet marketing topics and had interviews with local Adelaide marketing professionals on various different internet marketing topics. And that blog still exists. I've got it linked at the moment from the podcast website, the webmarketingadelaide.com.au podcast. I've got a link there as blog. But I've just made the decision recently to stop updating that blog at internetmarketingadelaide.com and to move all of the blogging stuff over to the podcast website, webmarketingadelaide.com.au. And I'll probably still keep the blog up there, but all the new stuff's going to be added to the new site, just because WordPress is a much better platform, much easier to use, and you actually own the content on your own sort of site instead of it being hosted on Blogger's servers or Google's servers. So I thought for this episode, I'd go back to some of my favourite interviews that I did with various people on the Internet Marketing Adelaide blog and just pick out some bits and pieces that I thought of were really interesting and useful and put them together for this episode. So I've got four different topics with a number of different interviews that sort of came into it. And those topics are video marketing, social media marketing, pay-per-click, which is PPC, namely AdWords, which is where you only pay per click that you receive on your ads. So these are the ads you see on the side of the Google search results and also along the top sometimes. And I've actually got two different interviews talking about pay-per-click. And the last topic is copywriting. And this is writing content for your website. Could be, traditionally for other mediums as well, like brochures or direct marketing mail stuff or whatever, but these days it's much more about the web, and it could be sort of sales letters, or it could also be things like blogs and other sort of just general information on your website. And I've got two interviews on that as well, so they're the sort of four topics I'm going to be drawing on, and I think I'll just jump straight into it now. The first set of tips is it's video marketing. This is from an interview I did with James Withrow from Get Seen Online. I had a really great video that they did called Herbert Wilkes, A Hungry Life, I think it was called. It was a sort of a marketing video with a mouse as the main character. It's really good. I'll put a link in the show notes for you so you can go check that one out. Quite sort of funny and interesting, and that was how I sort of came across James, and then we ended up having this interview where we talked about video marketing amongst other things. But one of the questions I asked him was, what are five things that small business owners can do to leverage online video for marketing? And this is the five tips that he gave. He said, the most important thing is to get good quality content. Think about what content might interest your customers. What do they see every day that they might find interesting? And then you put that in your content. Steer away from blatant self-promotion. Do research. See what kind of videos are popular on YouTube in your niche and use Google's keyword tool to see what people are searching for. If you don't have much skill or editing software, plan your shot carefully and try to shoot everything in a sequence so there's not much editing required. So let me just repeat that one. So if you don't have editing software or much skill in the editing arena, then try and shoot your video all in order as you would like it to appear in the video itself, That way it sort of minimizes the editing you have to do. And there's free editing software out there on both Windows and Mac that you can use to just sort of make it cut away the bits and pieces that you don't want in there, but it doesn't need to be a really complicated process of editing. And this last tip was ask around. There's plenty of people involved in film in some way who can help you with help and advice. So you may know people, a friend of a friend, or even a friend of yours, or someone in your network who might be able to help you with advice on videos. Okay, the next topic was social media marketing. Now, just before I go on, I'll say that all these tips, at least the links to the full interviews, will be in the show notes at webmarketingadelaide.com.au, and I'll probably write up a blog post as well with just a summary of these tips as well. So look for that in the future. But this second set of tips talking about social media marketing, this was with Tom Williamson from Twillion, and I asked him as one of the questions, what are some of your best practices and recommendations for doing social media marketing? And this is what he came up with. Be the voice of your company. And if different people are posting, different people from your business are posting as your company, they should have a different voice individually, but the message should remain consistent. So the message for the whole company should be consistent. It's okay to use slang and abbreviations where appropriate, that are appropriate to your market, but don't swear, because you don't really want to alienate people in that way. Be in direct contact with your clients. So, you might ask a question, they might get back to you on Twitter, say, and then you could sort of engage in a conversation with them. And here's some tips specifically for Facebook. Always have at least two page admins to avoid ownership of the page being passed on to a third party if an admin's profile is deleted. So this is a really good tip. If you have a page for your business and you're the only admin on that page, and then for some reason your personal account gets deleted, who knows why that could happen. It could be a mistake, or it could be you doing something a bit dodgy, or who knows, your account could get deleted. And if you're the only admin on there, it could be passed on to a third party, or it might disappear altogether. So you want to have two admins on there in case, the worst comes to worst, someone's profile gets deleted, but the whole page doesn't fall into the wrong hands, or worse, get deleted entirely as well. When writing on third-party pages as your page, so you can sign into Facebook and you can comment on other pages as your page. So the tip is to always add your name at the end of the post. You might put like a dash Nick, if it was me, or a little hat Nick, just sort of to denote who it is that's talking, to try and keep it a bit more personal and less kind of company face and more like the personal aspect of social media. And the third tip for that Facebook was for comments relating to business, post as your page, but for more personal comments, post as yourself. So this relates to Facebook allowing you to switch between your Facebook page and using it as yourself, which I just sort of discussed. So always try and use your personal profile if it's more of a personal comment, and then you sort of save the business profile for more business related stuff. And I've seen people that do it differently, and just in fact someone that I also interviewed, which we're going to talk about in our copywriting, she only uses Facebook for business, so all of her Facebook activity is business related. So I guess that's a slightly different way of looking at it. And Tom also had this tip for Twitter specifically. If there are multiple people posting for that account, use your brand name as your Twitter account, and then as your Twitter account name, so that's your handle @. But also the name itself, you can put next to the handle. And then when each person posts, they can put dash or hat, their initials, similar to what we said with Facebook above, or just before, to sort of label their posts personally. All right, the next section is PPC, pay-per-click advertising. And I actually interviewed two different people on this topic, using the same questions, which was interesting to see sort of two different slightly different answers and see where they overlapped and different perspectives they had. The first few questions we're going to look at are from Andrew Weber from SEO Maverick. And one particular thing I asked him about was, what is quality score and what is it used for? This is what he said. Quality score measures the relevance of the landing page to the keyword and ad copy. In general, the higher your quality score, the lower your costs and the better your ad position. The quality score is calculated every time your keyword triggers one of your ads and is determined by several factors. And here are just a few of those factors that affect the quality score. The landing page quality, historical click-through rates, keyword relevance to ad copy and landing page, and also Google has, he provides a link here, or he told me a link which I provided, which I'll put in the show notes, which has some more information on quality score. So that might seem a little bit sort of random and out of left field if you're not really familiar with AdWords and with PPC, pay-per-click, how it works. But basically, Google has this unique system where it's not just the amount of money you pay that determines, you know, where your ad's going to appear. It's actually the quality of your ad, and they sort of measure quality using this quality score thing where they try to match up the keywords that people are typing in, which are the ones you're bidding on, with the keywords in your ad. So the little, you'll have a little headline, you'll have a little bit of ad copy, and then you also have a display landing page, the one where you're telling people that you're sending them to. And then there's the words that are on the landing page itself. So when people click on the ad, they get taken to a page on your site known as the landing page, where they land. And Google's software actually assesses that landing page and sort of determines by looking at various factors on the page whether it's relevant to the ad and relevant to the keywords, and then they come up with this quality score overall. And you can actually, if you have a good quality score, you can actually appear higher up and more often with your ads, can actually appear higher up, and it will cost you less money. And on the other side, if you have a really low quality score or a low quality score, or lower than others, then you can end up having to pay more to appear high up in the advertising spots, or to appear at all. If you have a really low quality score, you probably won't appear at all. So it's not just the amount you pay, which is kind of the typical way that advertising works. I mean, you have a TV advertisement, you make the advertisement, you pay the amount that's being asked, and you get your ad up there. Same with the newspaper, same with magazines. But this sort of news system is fairly unique, where you really you pay, but you also have to have good quality. So, which kind of goes back to sort of Google's search or organic search as well, where they're really looking for quality sites. So they're just trying to sort of carry that across to advertising as well. And the other person I talked to about PPC was Chris Schwartz from the Search Guys. And I asked him, what's the difference between Google's display network and their regular search results ads? And this is just talking about this two different sorts of advertising networks that Google sort of offers from within AdWords. And this is what he said. The search results are displayed on Google's SERPs and their partners' websites, such as HotFrog, which is a directory here in Australia. Now, the display network allows advertisers to deliver text ads, image ads, video ads to third-party websites who have elected to be part of that network. So you actually on other websites rather than just on Google itself. Google delivers most of its ads through the display network. For example, ads popping up over YouTube videos are ads on their display network. There are also mobile ads, which are shorter text ads, and they can be shown in various different places, including in games. And then I asked him another question on this topic, which was, do the two mediums require a different strategy? And he said, yes, user intents differ very much, therefore our strategies must differ as well to sort of match those user intents. Search ads are targeted much more towards a person who's sort of looking for something, obviously, someone's searching for something, so they have sort of an intent to look for something, whereas ads on the display network are targeted by the content of the page. They generally have a lower click-through rate. These ads are generally more useful for branding and have a similar strategy to Facebook and LinkedIn. The display network targets their ads either by keywords on the page or by choosing the theme of the website to target as a whole. And the website themes are assigned by Google. You'll have to use a bit of trial and error, Chris says, to decide which is best between which strategy is best and which network is best, whether you're going for the display network or the regular search ads. It's important, Chris says, to test and to measure everything, which I think you can probably apply to a lot of things within business as a whole, and specifically web marketing, where so many things are, in fact, measurable and testable. And you can do that and get those numbers out there and actually see what's working. So Chris sort of drums his point in. It's important to test, make sure you measure everything. If your website is not delivering well, you can choose to not have your ads display there. Sorry, if a website is not delivering well, you can choose not to have your ads display there. So if you find that, you know, a lot of your ads are showing up on a particular website, but you aren't getting any conversions from there, or you're not getting much time on site, people are bouncing out straight away, so it doesn't seem like it's very relevant, then you can actually, in your settings, say, hey Google, I don't actually want my ads showing on this particular website anymore. And that's fine. So you should sort of be on top of those things and be measuring your results over time so you can make these adjustments. You can also use what's known as negative keywords or negative sites to identify websites where you don't want your ads to appear on. So you can actually do this sort of discounting site thing using a sort of more of a keyword approach as opposed to individual sites. And there are also three keyword targeting options, and they are broad, phrase, and exact match. And Chris is saying we never, as in the search guys where he works, never use the traditional broad match for our keywords. There's plenty of neat tricks you can use, but there's plenty of neat tricks you can use by combining keyword targeting options. And just as a brief sort of background, broad, phrase, and exact match. Broad just means that if you select the broad match for a particular keyword, so you'll get a very wide range of keywords that are vaguely, if someone types in something that's only vaguely related to your keyword, the ad will still appear. If it's phrase, it has to include your exact phrase, but can appear include other words. So, I mean, if you'd chosen to target sandwich maker as a phrase, but you chose phrase match as a keyword, but you chose phrase match, then you would also appear for blue sandwich maker and sandwich maker America and sandwich maker Adelaide. Whereas if you choose the last option, which is exact match, you only will appear for sandwich maker. If someone just types in sandwich maker and nothing else. And broad, the other one I mentioned, means that you'll appear for any time that someone searches using the word sandwich or maker, or like sandwich with a whole bunch of words in between and maker, which could be completely irrelevant or could be relevant, who knows. Alright, let's move on to the next section, which is copywriting. And this first excerpt here is from Anna Peterson from Copybreak. Great sort of pun name there. It seems all copywriting businesses have sort of a pun name, but hers is Copybreak. And I asked her, what are five things that anybody can do to improve their web copy? And these are her five tips. Number one, always ensure you introduce the main subject points at the beginning of your copy, in brackets, above the fold. And the fold is basically just the point at which you have to scroll. So basically, you want everything to be there without anyone having to scroll. Readers don't want to have to scroll to find the important or relevant information. Point number two, write for your audience. Don't focus on who you are and what you've achieved. Instead, focus on who your audience is and what they need to know, what they need and how you can help them. So what their needs are and how you can actually help them achieve those goals or those needs, fill those needs. Point number three, make sure your keywords fit with the natural flow of the copy. They shouldn't stick out like a sore thumb. And wherever possible, ensure you incorporate them into your page headings. Point number four, avoid long, complicated sentences and paragraphs. Most people will skim through the copy, so make your message as easy as possible to read and understand. Keep your tone conversational. The web is much more like a face-to-face interaction. So write like you would speak, but she puts in brackets, avoiding slang or profanity, of course. And now, if you remember earlier on in the episode when I was talking with Tom and talking about the social media marketing, he had said it's okay to use slang and industry speak, but he also mentioned no profanity. So keep in mind there's sort of two different perspectives there on whether slang is allowed or a good idea. And I also spoke with Karen, I'm going to have to butcher this last name, I'm afraid, Karen, Zaskolny from Copy with Cream, another great pun name for a copywriting business, Copy with Cream, that's Karen. I'll put her name and link to her website, as well as everyone else's website, and the full interviews as well in the show notes. If you go check out her stuff, I asked her the same questions again as Anna, and I'm also going to bring out the same question here that I asked her, which because she had some great tips as well. So I asked her again, what are five things anybody can do to improve their web copy? And here are her five tips. Number one, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. An oldie, but a goodie. Number two, check grammar, punctuation, and spelling. Apostrophes especially. I have a blog. This is Karen speaking. I have a blog of great advertising and copywriting boo-boos. So you can check that out in the links in the show notes. Point number three, avoid jargon. Every industry has jargon. Don't use it. You will alienate your audience. If you can find a simple word to use, say something, use it. For example, instead of require, you could use need. And it's interesting, I was just talking about this in relation to sort of slang, industry slang or slang and profanity. Karen here is talking about industry jargon. So certainly you don't want to use jargon that might alienate your users as or your readers, as Karen says. But I think it's okay to use jargon if it's jargon that your target customers would identify with, that they would use. So you want to sort of, it's going to be a case by case basis there, depending on your market. So you want to tread carefully if you're using jargony type terms, because you don't want to alienate anyone, but feel free to use them if you can sort of help to get that relationship going with your customer by using words that they identify with, because it's the industry that they're in. Point number four, break it up. Nobody wants to read reams and reams of text. It looks too hard. Break it up with subheadings, bolding, bullet points, anything you can do to make it easier to absorb. This is a really great tip, and something I always try to do with my articles. It's just to break it up. I mean, and it's something I also notice myself when I'm doing reading, is that especially after maybe a long day at work or doing lots of research for a client or whatever, you're just seeing these big blocks of text on a page, and you just think, oh, it's just way too hard to read that. You want to look for something that you can easily skim through. So you want headings and subheadings in there, so you can, a lot of people would just read those subheadings and then find one that they sort of like or identify with, and then sort of read that paragraph there if that's the particular piece of information they're interested in. Another thing you can do is dot points or numbered points in your article there, to sort of try and break it up a bit more as well. And the whole idea is to make it feel much easier to absorb, so you can draw that person in. And point number five from Karen was cut and polish. Ladies think diamonds, gentlemen think cars. Cut and polish means to edit, edit, and edit again. Most of us overwrite, Karen says. So the trick is to cut out the waffle, polish the words, craft the phrases, get rid of anything that doesn't help your message. Most people just write something down, then that's it. The best copy you will read has been edited many, many times. That's a great tip from Karen there. And I'm not sure if you noticed in me speaking it out, but those last two sets of tips from Karen and from Anna, the two copywriters, they were actually written in the article by themselves. So I don't know if you noticed if they were but they're definitely, I definitely noticed they were easy to speak than the other tips, which were written by me from notes from my interviews with those other guys. But these last two, the copywriters actually wrote them themselves, and I definitely noticed that it flowed much better when it was their words, and that sort of point from Karen at the end there definitely drove that home. Like I said, you can find all of these tips, links to their websites, links to the full interviews, and also I'll try and do a blog post in the future, near future, with sort of a summary of these tips so you can read through. I hope you found this this episode to be interesting and useful, and it's great to sort of look back at some of the old interviews I've done for the last year or two. So yeah, I hope it was enjoyable for you. We've got our last episode of the year coming up next week, and then of course the end of the year, and then I've got something special planned. Hopefully I can pull it together in time for the first episode of next year on January 3rd. So we'll see how that goes. But until next week, have a good one, good luck in your business, and I'll see you next week. Cheers.